Good morning, New Mexico. This is the Santa Fe Radio Cafe. As you know, my name is Mary Charlotte. We are broadcasting from the Santa Fe Baking Company and streaming on the web at ksfr.org. ksfr.org is also the place where you can go and make a pledge, but even better, you can call 428-1393. Now, I am very, very happy to welcome back to the program, he hasn't been on for a long time, Gary Glazner. His new book is called Dementia Arts, Celebrating Creativity in Elder Care. He's founder of the Alzheimer's Poetry Project. Welcome.
Welcome, and good morning, Santa Fe.
Good morning. Good morning, Santa Fe and Taos and Rio Rancho and Albuquerque and Los Alamos and Las Vegas and all the people listening far away as well. We've got people listening really across the country and sometimes around the world.
And I want to welcome the people from my corner of the of New Mexico, which is Lone Butte. Good morning, Lone Butte.
Good morning, everybody. So you are here to do, among other things, a conference that's happening this Saturday. What's that all about?
Well, that's an interesting story. New Mexico is one of about five states in the country that has an Alzheimer's and dementia plan. And this was put in place last fall. It came out in October. I was really excited to see that New Mexico is really taking a lead in working with this element of our community of people living with memory loss. So I read through the report, and there was no art at all in the report.
Oh, my goodness.
And I just thought to myself, well, this is either horrible or an amazing opportunity. And so I got with James Ross, who's Governor Martinez's healthcare guy, and Miles Copeland from the New Mexico Department of Long-Term Aging. And we met with them, with some of the artists that I work with in New Mexico, especially New Mexico Literary Arts. And we proposed to them a series of points to support the Alzheimer's and Dementia Plan. We just walked through it and we said, we can help you here, here, here. And the main thing that we suggested was we do a conference. And so New Mexico History Museum and Tom Leach at the Palace of the Governors, Kate Nelson, have been super supportive. They're our partners in this. We have a lot of supporting organizations, including the Alzheimer's Association chapter in New Mexico, and Vista Living, which is where I started the Alzheimer's Poetry Project. Jutta Lutwig, who is the person who brought the concept of Alzheimer's cafes, these social settings, to America. And she's the first person to bring those to America. And now there's over 100 around the country. So it's a real great group. And our special guest is Jane Tygeson, who runs Discover Your Story at the Minneapolis Institute of Art, which is a group that people living with memory loss and their family members come and get a museum tour. And so she's going to teach a workshop on that. So that's how we got started. And I'm very excited to be able to do that here in Santa Fe.
So that is happening this coming Saturday, and we are giving away five entrances into that conference here at KSFR during our fund drive. The number is 428-1393. And if that sounds interesting to you, for the next 15 minutes, that's until, well, why don't we say until 8:30, because that's about 17 minutes from now. We will have, for every dollar that is given to KSFR, we have a very generous match of up to $150. So give a call and let people know that you would like to go to the conference, if you would. You can also, with or instead of the conference, get a copy of Gary's wonderful new book called Dementia Arts, Celebrating Creativity in Elder Care, which I imagine very much accompanies the conference, because it's really for caregivers.
Yeah, it's a book for caregivers. If your mom has dementia, or your spouse or your loved one, this book is for you. And it's how to use different kinds of art. And it comes out of my experience over the last 10 years of doing this work.
So you've been doing this, I mean, when you used to live in Santa Fe, Gary, and when you started this Alzheimer's Poetry Project, you were still living here, and you came on the air a number of times. Mm-hmm. How did this work begin?
Well, it started in 1997, and I got a grant to work at an adult daycare center in Northern California. And my moment of inspiration was I was tasked with teaching a poetry workshop, but no instruction, just use poetry. I didn't know very much about Alzheimer's or dementia or memory loss, but I hit on the idea of using classic poems that the people might have learned as kids. So my moment of inspiration was, there was a man in the group, his head was down, seemingly unaware of his surroundings, and I said the Longfellow poem, I shot an arrow into the air, and his eyes popped open, he said, it fell to earth, I know not where, and suddenly he was back with us, and he was able to participate, and it was just an incredible moment as a poet to see how useful the poems could be.
I cannot even imagine being you in that moment. I mean, did tears come to your eyes?
Yeah, essentially, it was really emotionally moving. And then 2 weeks ago, I was in Boston, and I had done a workshop the day before, and I had a day off, and I was just doing all kinds of fun art stuff. And I found out they were having an event at the Longfellow House to rededicate this bust of Longfellow. So I went by, and I walk in, and they said, you know who's here? Longfellow's great-great-granddaughter.
Oh, my goodness.
And so I got to meet her and got to share that story with her. And it was just a marvelous moment, and she really liked it, and I liked meeting her. And then I found out that her name was Frankie, which was also my mother's name. So the second part of the inspiration for me, and I think the reason that I've dedicated my life to doing this work, is at the time of that 97 workshop in Northern California, my mom was in the last stages of cancer. So she had tumors in her brain, and she was on heavy pain medicine, and so she was having dementia behavior. And my dad called one morning and said, your mom's really agitated, I need help, could you get some cherry ice cream? She's asking for cherry ice cream. So I went to the store and I got the ice cream, and I remember looking back and getting the ice cream out of the car, and I had all the poetry books with me from the workshop, and I just thought, I'm going to bring them in and use them with my mom. And so I brought them in, and they were childhood sweethearts. They became boyfriend and girlfriend at age 5 and 6.
Your parents.
My parents, Billy and Frankie.
Wait, at age 5 and 6?
5 and 6, they were childhood sweethearts. They met each other in grade school, and they were sweethearts all through their lives.
Oh, my goodness.
And my mom used to tease my dad, Billy, with, can you bake a cherry pie, Billy boy?
Uh-huh.
And so...
Oh, yeah, that song.
That was one of the little rhymes that was in the book, and so I started to recite that, and she began to sing, can you bake a cherry pie,
oh,
Billy boy,
goodness.
Billy boy, and doing these little hand motions that were very playful and laughing, and again, it just reinforced to me how powerful the poems could be, in this case, in a hospice setting with my own mom. And so since then, I've developed the Alzheimer's Poetry Project, and we've now done programming in 24 states and internationally in Australia, Germany, Poland, and South Korea.
We're talking to Gary Glasner, and if you would like a copy of his book, you can call 505-428-1393. It's called Dementia Arts, Celebrating Creativity in Elder Care. You can also go to the conference this weekend. When you call, please ask our phone volunteers about the details. So have you, Gary, been working with, for example, researchers and scientists who talk about the brain? I mean, it's fascinating to me that whereas short-term memory, whereas ability to get around, whereas all kinds of memories are gone, the memory of childhood learned poetry, is still very much there and very accessible.
Yeah, so I am doing a research project with the University of Miami in Oxford, Ohio, with their gerontology department, and we are researching that now. We got some funding to do that, so that's exciting. And we did a retreat in February, so there's 3 papers that are going to be presented at the Gerontology Society of America annual conference in Washington, D.C. this fall. And so those papers look at some of the reasons why we think art, poetry, music, dance works with people with memory loss.
Is it something that you can kind of explain in broad strokes to the layman?
Yeah, so there's a couple of studies that were out there that we really look at that sort of, it was kind of like reverse muse, right? So we were doing this programming, but then when you want to explain it to people, you start to look around and see, like, maybe how is it working? So there was a study in Germany in 2004 that showed that reciting poetry using call and response, which is when the session leader says a line of poetry and has the group respond, that's our main technique we use. And so what they found was is it lowers the heart rate and lowers the pulse, which is an indication that stress is being reduced. So that seems to underpin our sort of performative style of poetry. And then in 2007, there was a study done in Liverpool where they put students in an fMRI machine and they had them read lines of Shakespeare that were a particular technique that Shakespeare used called a functional shift, right? So this is a fancy term that just means a noun shifts to a verb. So an example is the word God shifts to godded. So he godded me. And this is something Shakespeare used throughout his work. And so what they do when they see that, when the students read that line, the language center of their brain lights up with synaptic activity. So we have these two things: reduction of stress, which I think is an aerobic benefit. You're taking in oxygen, oxygen's getting to your brain, it's lowering stress, and you're having this increased synaptic activity in the language center of the brain around unusual use of language. So now, those two things are happening.
That's, I mean, this is incredibly interesting, and it does make one wonder whether reciting poetry and doing call and response and singing like that, for those of us who do not at this point have dementia and Alzheimer's, would keep our brains functioning better.
Right, so there's this whole idea of cognitive reserve, you know, of like if you have more than one language, right, if you have advanced degrees, these kinds of things, they do show that it will slow the onset of dementia. It's not going to stop it. They don't know what the cure is, so it's a little hard to say, you know, that you can stop it that way. Two things that have come out in the last week are incredibly heartening for people that have a loved one with memory loss. And one is that the Nobel Prize was given for, it was two scientists, a couple and a scientist who share it. And that was for discovering in the brain where our sort of internal GPS system is.
Yeah.
And so they think that that's going to really help with understanding what causes Alzheimer's. And then the other breakthrough, which is just huge, and this is out of a hospital in Boston, they have been able to recreate in a Petri dish Alzheimer's cells, which means that for the first time that they can do drug tests that will be on not an animal drug test that they find, you know, maybe it works in mice, but as they use it on people, it doesn't work anymore, and maybe it's even harmful. They're going to now run 2,000 different drugs in this test situation and hopefully come out with something that will help people.
We're talking to Gary Glasner. The number here at the KSFR Fund Drive is 428-1393, 428-1393. And we've got, let's see, 8.5 minutes left on the match, which is of $150, generously given by one of our beloved, wonderful board members. And so up to $150 will be matched. So you give 50 and that becomes 100, et cetera, up to $150. And we do have some people who have already called. Thank you. Let's keep the phones going. And you can get, once again, a copy of this book. We've got 5 books total, Dementia Arts, Celebrating Creativity in Elder Care. And also the conference is from 9 to 4 this weekend at the New Mexico History Museum, so you can get an entrance ticket to that. Once again, 428-1393. So you have, I remember you wrote a book called How to Make a Living as a Poet, is that right?
Yeah, which the joke that goes along with that is that they keep it in the fiction section of the bookstore.
Right. But you've done it. I mean, this has become your life, and it's probably grown beyond your wildest dreams when you started this dementia work.
Yeah, my dreams are pretty wild, so I'm still not quite hitting them. But I wanted to share, so we talked about the research, and we talked about maybe some breakthroughs that are going to help people. But our mission is, what can we do today?
Yeah.
Because even if that drug gets found today, you're talking 10 years before it'd be on the market. So what are we going to do today? So I want to give one example that from the book. This was from working with the Museum of Modern Art in New York. And it was a dream come true for me because I got to pick what artwork I used, and I picked Van Gogh's Starry Nights painting. And so what we did was we recited some poems around it, and then we used the artwork to inspire our poem. And what we did was we experienced the painting through our senses. So we asked open-ended questions around the painting. So what do stars look like? What do they taste like? What do they smell like? And then we explored the colors of the poems. And I'd like to share with the audience the poem that came out of that. So this is a group of people with dementia and their care partners. We're talking about Van Gogh's painting Starry Nights. Their answers form the lines of the poem exactly as they're said. And so here's the poem. Starry nights. Appreciative. Very calm, yet there's turmoil. A little suspect. A little sinister. Something evil about that plant. It's confusing. A star tastes delicious. A star tastes like a Milky Way. If I had a thought, I would, but you're okay, so you can't get away. A star smells like peanut butter. You've got to do it. A star sounds like full heritage. Everyone looks at a star and dreams. A star sounds like a symphony. The painting is soothing. You could sleep happily. You can read a lot into Van Gogh's painting. I like the sun, the way it moves. Oh my goodness, let me think about that. It looks like a storm. Blue is his favorite color, as we can see.
So, lines written by different people who are in your group contemplating the painting.
Yeah, so I would ask the question, what does a star taste like? And the lovely answer that stars taste like Milky Ways.
That's so
which
great.
Just brought the group, just laughing so hard. And so that's just an example of how we used artwork in that sense to inspire the poem.
428-1393 is the number. Apparently, we have had another challenge of $175 because we met the first one. So we are in very good shape, but please give a call right now to 428-1393.
I just want to say, before we talk, because I'm so happy to be here talking about my new book and honored to be here. I used to be a DJ on KSFR.
Yeah.
And I had a show called Poetry Talk. And I know Santa Fe understands this, but I think it doesn't hurt to say it. As I travel around the country and do this work, I get to listen to a lot of radio. And I love to listen to, especially Wisconsin has this system where as you drive out of the area, the new station clicks in. And so you actually can drive the whole state listening to public radio. But what's happening across the board is that, and I love the BBC and I love NPR, but these type of local shows, these local produced shows like Mary Charlotte's show, are becoming increasingly hard to find. And so I know the people out there listening will call in now, and I get to say it this time, I get to say 428-1393. So please call in and show that you know how valuable this show is, because it really is an amazing show. I was happy to see that you're getting an intern and that you've interviewed like thousands of people. It's been 10 years, right?
Yeah, 11 years.
11 years, and every morning you're interviewing a couple people at least.
Yep.
And so that's thousands of people. But the thing is, you find the interesting people. And you have this way of talking with them and doing your homework and really having great discussions.
Well, thank you, Gary Glazer. I appreciate that. And, I mean, this is why we ask people to call, is to keep local radio local. I went to a conference recently on public radio in Portland, Oregon, and There was a little session in this conference called Public Radio 101. It was talking about all the different things that one should know if one is, for example, programming a radio station and how do you make decisions about what to put on the air. And it was very much against having the people who were doing this were pretty much universally against the idea of having an eclectic format radio station where you've got all kinds of different shows, where you've got music and news and local stuff and different interests and things like that. And I went up to the guy and I said, why? I mean, this is what we have. It's incredibly popular. He goes, well, you know, to get the most mainstream listeners. It's like, and then
you
I thought,
you don't want that.
You know, here we are in Santa Fe where mainstream is actually more unusual than eccentric.
Right.
We're all eccentrics in one way or another, or so many of us are, and even the mainstream people kind of embrace that.
Yeah.
And we're living in this very unusual community, and we get to have an unusual radio station.
Yeah, it's no coincidence that the Alzheimer's Poetry Project comes out of Santa Fe,
yeah.
and that this work comes out of what you say is the eccentric people, and KSFR, I think, serves that so well with its just, you know, Lauren Camp's Audio Saucepan,
yes,
and those
so
jazz
good.
Shows. And then you've got this new guy, I don't know his name, but he's like a famous broadcaster,
yeah,
that
Dave
has this
Marish.
Amazing voice, you know,
yep.
he's like, KSFR. I mean, I can't do his voice.
No, he has a beautiful,
it's beautiful.
Booming bass voice. I love
yeah.
it.
I just imagine, you know, what a great resource to have. I wanted to share...
Wait, let me just give the phone number
yeah.
one more time. 428-1393, and it's 829, so... But I think this new challenge match goes beyond 820, it goes beyond 830. So whatever it is, give us a call, 428-1393.
I wanted to share another way of creating poetry, and this one could be directly done with a loved one in a home setting. It could even be a project where students go into a school and do it. This is what we use is taking an oral history from the person. So I was working at Sierra Vista, and we actually were recording a poem that the group had created. We used as a commercial, which KSFR put, I think it's the first time, you know, an on-air recitation of a poem. So we recorded that, and then this guy came and sat down, a beautiful gentleman named Jose Mondragon, and he came and sat down, and he was listening us to record, and he actually had a little dog on his lap. He has a little companion, and we're sitting there talking, and he starts to tell me this story, and I ask him, Jose, do you mind if I record this? So I recorded his story, and then this is all his words. I've edited it a little bit, shaped it a little bit into a poem, but they're all his words, and it's called Copper Mine. So this is Jose Mondragon, his experience of being a copper miner. The rope was like a rope you would tie a horse with, about as thick as a quarter, to pull you up or down out of the mine. The whole thing came sliding down. I put my hands against the board. Oh my God, that's all I say. They tell me I don't see myself. I was in a little hole about as big as my body, in the mine, in the chute. I held my breath. I passed out. They tell me I don't see myself. A bunch of water, blue, blue copper mining water. It was running all around. Dirt came down the shaft. The board came down. I was standing to one side, looking up at the top, looking up to my partner. I could see the light. The dirt came down like snow. I stuck my head under the board. They put me on a stretcher and brought me up to the shaft. They had one little cage. It could only hold two men. They put me in the cage, standing straight up on the stretcher. I passed out. They took me to the hospital. They put me in the freezer like I was dead. I said, God help me. They tell me I never saw myself.
Wow.
So Jose's experience of being buried in the copper mine and making it out alive, and that's just an incredible poem. And you know, now we have that to know what his life was like and know what his experience is like.
I was listening, you probably heard this, to an episode of This American Life not too long ago, in which there was somebody who was living with a husband and wife were living with the parents of one of them, and the mom had Alzheimer's disease, and the younger man, the husband of this woman's daughter, was a performance artist. And so when this woman who had dementia started to go to kind of another world, instead of trying to bring her back, he would go there with her.
Yeah, exactly.
And she would say, I'm in the jungle. And he said, yes, look at the monkeys.
Right.
And they would have so much fun together. And it brought out a kind of love and creativity and fun. And they sort of pulled back from this whole episode and said, you know, this is where the latest research is going, is instead of trying to bring them back to cold, hard reality, which at that age isn't really that much fun to be in the first place.
Right.
Go where they are.
Right, yeah. So that's a big part of the work that we do, is meeting them where they are. And, you know, it changes the way you communicate. So this book, Dementia Arts, is really about communication, and it's about listening skills. So in that case, I was really listening to Jose, and like your example, to be improvisational in the moment with the people is really powerful, and that's what we're going to talk about at the conference. So that's what people will learn, and they'll get those skills. And one of the groups that I'm so excited to work with is a group from Santa Fe called Life Songs.
Yeah.
And they do create songs with people that are in hospice settings. They're doing a lot of work now in care facilities, including Santa Fe Cares, who's going to come. And so you'll get to learn how they create songs. You'll get to learn how to do, to look at art, to create art, and poetry as well. So I'm very excited about that. I hope people will call in to 428-1393 and take get that extra premium there that we're offering for the conference.
Very much so. 428-1393. We're talking to Gary Glazner, author of the book Dementia Arts, Celebrating Creativity in Elder Care, founder of the Alzheimer's Poetry Project. We're going to take a little break. We'll be back in just a moment. And while this break is happening, please give us a call, 428-1393. And we're back with Gary Glazner. We also, before we go on talking about Dementia Arts and creativity and elder care and all of that, we want to get some thank yous. A bunch of people have called. It's been a very nice morning so far on the Radio Cafe. What's going on in the control room?
Yeah, there's lots going on in the control room. I don't know if you had a chance to see my note, but the ALH Foundation came in and said starting almost 7 minutes ago, they will match dollar for dollar everything that's donated up to $1,000.
Oh, my goodness.
And it goes beyond your show as well up till noon today, but it's going to add to the total we get during this hour as well. It's great.
Good. We do a $1,000 challenge. We do a $1,000 goal every day on the Radio Cafe, and some days we meet it, sometimes we don't. Sometimes we exceed it. Sometimes we exceed it by a lot. So let's go for that $1,000 goal for this hour. 428-1393. Now, do we have any thank yous?
We certainly do, and there's people on three phones right now.
Yay!
Thanks to Grace Perez.
Thank you.
And Burning Books.
Thank you. Oh, Burning Books, they're wonderful.
Yeah, Rose Marie.
Thank you.
Michael Stewart. Michael Stewart.
Oh, great, thanks.
And, of course, Anonymous.
And Anonymous, yes. As I always say, one of my favorite artists in the history of art is named Anonymous. We're talking to Gary Glazner. Now you're working with people who have dementia, who have Alzheimer's, older people, and those people are very vulnerable. In some ways, equally vulnerable are their caregivers and their families.
Right. So one of the things I'm most proud of, working on a project with National Center for Creative Aging, creating a toolkit for caregivers. And we talked earlier about research, and that project's being researched by the University of Central Florida. And so we're just in the process now. It's going to be beta tested in the next 6 months, starting in about a month from now. And those are all art lessons that people can do with their loved ones.
What are some examples of those?
Well, the main one that we use is this call and response technique. And
right.
So... we're typically working in group settings of anywhere from, five or six people up to, the most I've ever done was 80 people.
Oh, my goodness.
And that was in Little Rock, Arkansas. And the ex-chief of police lived in that facility. And we were doing call and response, and then I got the group dancing. So I actually got to dance with the Little Rock chief of police. And he was a great dance partner, except for he kept trying to lead.
428-1393. Now, the, 1393, sorry. I wonder sometimes what's going on in my synapses upstairs with these numbers. But, you have these folks who are kind of living in another world, and this call and response works. You must meet people who come from more of a call and response tradition. African Americans, people who have grown up in that kind of like church and religious world where call and response is a normal part of their lives.
Right. Call and response is interesting because we find it throughout our community and our society, including the perfect example you just gave, which is in religious ceremonies. Almost all religious ceremonies have some element of call and response, but especially gospel. Music, jazz and blues are you know, in a large part based around call and response. Classical music, the counterpoint could be a type of call and response. So it's really powerful for us. The religious part of the religious ceremony where the priest or pastor says, do you take, you know, this person to be your lawfully wedded wife or husband? That's a form of call and response. So it's embedded in us. And going back to the Greek theater of the Greek chorus of using call and response there. So I want to give an example to the listeners. How could they do this, right? So maybe it's your mom has Alzheimer's or your dad or a loved one. So you just simply say to the person that you're going to say a line of poetry, you're going to share poetry with them, and you want to say the line and have them repeat after you. So you say, you know, I'll say it and then you say it. So shall we try it, Mary Charlotte, you and I try it a little bit?
Sure.
All right, so we're going to do a poem by, this is actually a dicho. This is a Spanish proverb or wisdom saying. So we'll do it first in Spanish, then English. All right, here we go. I say it, you say it. Pan es pan.
Pan es pan.
Queso es queso.
Queso es queso.
No amor.
No amor.
Sino un beso.
Sin un beso.
Beso, beso, beso.
Beso, beso, beso.
Abrazo.
Abrazo.
Bread is bread.
Bread is bread.
Cheese is cheese.
Cheese is cheese.
Without a kiss.
Without a kiss.
There is no love.
There is no love.
Kiss, kiss, kiss.
Kiss, kiss, kiss.
Hug.
Hug.
And so we usually end that.
It's better in Spanish.
It's much better in Spanish. It really rolls off the tongue. We usually end that with hugging. And so yesterday I was working down in Las Cruces, and at the end of that, we actually, everybody reached across and hugged somebody. But you can sit with your loved one and do that poem and do it that call and response, and then you can increase their participation by taking their hand and gently moving it to the rhythm of the poem. And you do this almost little hand dance, and it's really powerful, and we've seen that work so many times. I was working years ago in Las Cruces, and there was a woman, again, who's seemingly not listening at all, and I was doing My Love is Like a Red, Red Rose by Robert Burns. And I started to recite that, and I just brushed her hand as I was going around the room, and she took her little finger and grabbed onto my hand. From across the room, you wouldn't even know she was responding, but she held on to me until I finished the poem.
Oh, my goodness.
And so you can see this, you know, it's touch, it's humor, it's being playful. Like you said earlier, it's being in the moment with them and inhabiting perhaps the world that they're in, right? So that wherever their mind is taking them, that you're reinforcing that instead of negating it.
I was going to ask you earlier whether physical touch plays a role. I mean, you're doing poetry, and poetry is deeply emotional, but then the physical touch somehow brings people out even more?
Yeah, and you can imagine a person that's living in an assisted living center, they may have very limited touch in their lives.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about a new project that I'm doing. I'm working at Fishkill Correctional Facility in upstate New York. It's the only dementia unit in a U.S. prison. So it's a unit in the prison that's all the people in it have been diagnosed with dementia. And I'm working with the gentleman. There's about 25 or 30 of them. And you can imagine in prison, like the concept of touch is really limited. So one of the things we do is we couple the poem with a prop. So we've been reciting The Raven by Edgar Allan Poe and then passing around raven feathers. And the guys in Fishkill just had such a great time with that. You know, they can feel the feather on their hand. They can use it as a fan. You know, just be very playful with it. And then we do an improvisational game called Pass the Smile. And this is a really simple improv game. It's a theater improv game. And you just, one person smiles and they start, and then they look to the person to the left, and you just pass a smile around the room. Well, you can imagine being able to survive in prison in some ways is they don't look at each other. And so the people that run it, the staff, was just blown away by the responses we were able to get. And very quickly after you start playing Pass the Smile, it devolves into laughter. And so people are laughing and playing. And at that moment, you can look in the room and say there is no dementia in the room.
What do you mean?
Well, there's nobody that's experiencing memory loss at that point. They're all just laughing and playing and having a great time.
Now, how are the people in that moment? And it's so much, as you write about it, it's so much about living in the moment.
Yeah.
For you, the caregiver, for you, Gary Glasner, for the people themselves, how is that like and how is that unlike a group of children doing a similar thing?
It's really similar, and one of the strengths of this project is we do intergenerational programming. So we started that in Santa Fe with the Dragonfly School, which is a preschool, and we bring the kids in. And now I'm working with a group in Brooklyn that's the youngest kids I've ever worked with. They're 2.5 and 3 years old. And they come in and they shake hands and hug the elders. We call them the neighbors. We're going to go visit the neighbors. And then they recite the poems. And it's just powerful. And a lot of these techniques, this call and response, that was developed out of working with kids. And so now we're looking at, you know, that it works the same with elders. But it's really powerful to combine those two groups.
They must love each other.
They do, so much so that the group in Brooklyn now, these are people from mid to late stage dementia. They might not have seen me for a month, and I walk in the room, and they immediately say, "Where are the kids? Go get the kids."
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
So it really brings up a lot of questions about consciousness, about presence, about
right.
what really is and isn't accessible.
Yeah, and I think, you know, what I get out of it as an artist and as a person is that old Buddhist saying to live in the moment. And that is what they teach us. That's what I learned from this.
We're talking to Gary Glasner about his work in Dementia Arts. His new book is called Dementia Arts, Celebrating Creativity in Elder Care. And you can get a copy of that book. I'm not sure that they're gone yet. We have a total of 5. 428-1393 in the 505 area code. 428-1393 is the number. And the conference, once again, is this weekend from 9 to 4 at the New Mexico History Museum. And you can also get a ticket to that. Ask our beloved phone volunteers who are doing such a wonderful job. So does it ever... I mean, I would imagine that both for you and for the family and for the staff working with these folks, that it can get overwhelming, that it can get frustrating.
Yeah, I think it's hardest for the family because when they see the person, they see so much of the loss, you know. And for me as an artist going in, I just take the person as they are in front of me. So it really isn't that feeling. But this idea of communicating around art and doing art together, I think can be rejuvenating for the caregiver. And a lot of what we're trying to do with this type of work is to give them tools, because caregiver burnout is a huge problem.
Right.
And, you know, people are what they call the sandwich generation, you know, where they're taking care of their kids, but they're also taking care of their parents. And so, you know, it's a huge societal problem. And art seems to really be a way to reach people today, to do something today with them.
So the book has a format that's kind of like recipes.
Yeah, that was really fun. I thought of how do I want to convey this information, and I thought of the... I was actually reading the New York Times cookbook, and there was such a playful tone that I just thought, that's the tone I want to have. And so this Amanda Hesser, who wrote that book, the New York Times cookbook, there was one recipe where she said, you know, you're going to ruin it if you stir it. There was a way of stirring it that was going to ruin it. And she said, but you're not going to do that because then I'll stay up late at night. And I just thought, that's what I want to have, this idea that the person has a friend, that the art lessons are nourishing, that they can be used on a daily basis. And so I put them in the form of recipes. So each one has a title, it has an ingredients, and then the instructions, just like a recipe. And then the publisher did a great job because all of the recipes in the book look like recipe cards.
Very interesting and really fun. Have you gotten feedback from caregivers yet?
Yeah, a little bit, but the book's still very new. It just has come out, so it's been limited, you know, me talking to people who've used it. But I did want to share one of the recipes. And so some of the recipes are really nuts and bolts how-to. Some are more inspirational and poetic, and some are just funny. So this one is Change the World Poetry Pie. Ingredients: one stubborn poet, one lifetime of work, 1 billion minds. Instructions: simmer on low for a long time, stir gently, and change the world one mind at a time.
Oh my goodness.
So that's my goal with the book.
Yeah.
And with the conference that people, I hope, will come out. We actually have a good amount of people who've signed up. We can use more. We can still fit more. But it's Santa Fe has really turned out to support this. And we have people coming down from Taos and up from Albuquerque. We've even got a couple people flying in from out of town. So it's really heartening to see how Santa Fe's supported the conference.
Well, among other things, I would think this kind of work really awakens compassion. There's a friend of the show who comes on several times during the year named Ulla Peterson, who runs a wonderful hospice for animals called the Kindred Spirits Animal Sanctuary, and makes such an analogy between the fact that when our pets get old, they're still part of our family, and we need to treat them well, just as we need to treat our human elders well. And the amount of compassion that one feels going to that particular sanctuary, which is essentially an animal hospice, which you think could be depressing, it's just completely uplifting. And unfortunately, I think a lot of elder homes aren't necessarily like that, but it seems like you're bringing that to it in a way that could maybe enliven caregivers and the relationship between the caregivers and the elders.
Yeah, I mean, that is the essence of this, and I totally can feel that so emotionally. We have a dog that just passed away after having him for 16 years, and we got him at the Espanola Animal Shelter, so thanks. Shout out to them up there. But I wanted to share with the group a story of, I was at a cafe at a poetry reading in Wisconsin, and I was giving a little talk and reading some poems from the Alzheimer's Poetry Project, and this woman came up at the end and said, "Oh, my mom is in a assisted living center." And I said, "Oh, where's she at?" And she said, "Well, she's in Santa Fe." Now, I'm in Wisconsin, and this woman comes up and says,
right,
her mom's in Santa Fe. And I said, "Well, where's she at in Santa Fe?" And she said, "It's Sierra Vista." And I said, "Oh, my God, I started this project at Sierra Vista." And so it turned out that I had just worked with her mom a few weeks earlier and had created a poem with the group. I was able to share the poem with her, and she shared it with her sisters, and they picked out the line. They knew her mom well enough to say, like, "We think that's the mom's line," and they were right. And so then a little time passed, and her name's Abby Frucht, and she wrote to me, and she said, "My mom is really declining, and is there anything I can do?" And I said, "Well," and Abby's a writer, she's a novelist, and I said, "Why don't you write something, and I'll share it with your mom the next time I'm with the group." I was coming back soon. So she wrote this. It's a little poem called "Dear Mom," and it says, I remember a song called "The Sad Guitar." You sang it to Sylvia, Liz, and me when we were little girls. We loved it. You strummed it for us on an air guitar whenever we wanted to hear it. The guitar was sad, but you made us happy. Love, Abby.
Oh, my goodness.
So I bring that poem in, and I read it to the group and to her mom, and then we all play our air guitars, and then we created a poem. Our inspiration was the end of the album "The Pussycat." So hand in hand on the edge of the sand, we dance by the light of the moon, the moon, the moon, the moon. So we use that as our inspiration, and then we ask questions about playing music and guitars and stuff. And so this was what her group responded with: "The Ballad of the Happy Guitar. A happy guitar with my husband. Everything makes me happy. Anyone makes me happy. To dance makes me happy. The Alan the Pussycat. Having you here, it's nothing immediate. The sound of a mandolin makes me happy. My father played mandolin. I want to dance some more. When I'm feeling well and I have good people with me, that makes me happy."
Gary Glasner and the Dementia Arts Project. The number, once again, here in the KSFR Fund Drive is 428-1393, 428-1393, and we're doing very well this hour. We're going to have thank yous in just a moment. But I wanted to ask you, before we wrap up, this work that you do, it brings people out, you know, people who might have been really turned inward, and then it brings them out again. Are they coming back to their old selves? Are they kind of new selves? I ask you this because my stepfather had Alzheimer's disease. And there was this very poignant moment where he was clearly losing. I mean, his old personality was gone, but a new personality came in, which was much more friendly, much more open, totally unprejudiced. He'd never really liked me very much. Suddenly he loved me.
Right, yeah. You know? Which is amazing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we do see people's personalities shift sometimes. I mean, I know families have told me this, and it can be either way. It can be, you know, a positive one or negative, but I think people, they certainly are less inhibited. And we often find that people will gravitate towards art. So, you know, somebody who was a furniture salesman suddenly starts to draw, this kind of stuff. And so, again, it's this idea of participatory art. So art that's created together. That's really what we're talking about. And that's what people will learn at the conference. They'll get workshops in it, in music, poetry, art making and art looking. And I hope people will come out for that. But I really hope that they're going to call up and support KSFR right now, take advantage of those premiums we're offering, or just make a donation to show that you know that this is a special show in across the board and all around the country. Radio Cafe is an amazing resource for Santa Fe. So 428-1393, 428-1393.
I think something else that your work brings out, which is so important to me, is the reality that art and art making and poetry and song are fundamental human traits. When everything else is gone, those things remain.
Yeah, and kind of at the core of it too is storytelling, right? So we're creating poems and, you know, we shape them on the page as poems, but it's really telling stories. And that's what Jane Tygeson does at Minneapolis Institute of Art. Her project is called Discover Your Story. And so people come to the museum and they get to look at art, but they really are about telling stories. And she's remarkable in using props because they'll look at a painting of an autumn scene where maybe they're going hunting or something like that, and she'll wear an old hunting cap and blow a duck call, you know, this kind of stuff. And so that's some of the things she's going to teach in her workshop.
428-1393 is the number, and we've just got about 2.5 minutes left before we go here on the Radio Cafe. Now, this book, it just came out, and it's basically for caregivers in nursing homes and elder facilities of one kind or another, and also, to some extent, the families of people with dementia and Alzheimer's.
Yeah, so the home caregiver and the professional caregiver can both use this. And I just wanted to share a little bit of the recipe for that Ballad of the Happy Guitar. So this is Miss Abby Frook's heirloom letter poem. And the ingredients are two hearts, one pure white blank page or more, one heaping help of desire to communicate, one ink bottle, midnight black, one quill pen or ballpoint pen if quill is unavailable, one writing desk, one oil lamp, one hand-sewn quilt to place on top of lap, and one parlor. And what you do is you sit down together with the person and you write down their story. It's that simple.
One parlor.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully people still have a parlor.
I don't think I'd know a parlor if I tripped in it. Gary Glasner, it's just great having you on the air. I don't know if you can tell us this in sort of 1 minute or less, but has this work that you do affected your own work as a poet?
Yeah, it has. It has, and throughout this book are poems that I've written about my experience being a caregiver, and I'll just share this one with you. This is with my dad at the end of his life. It's based on Theodore Rothke's poem. It's called The Ivy Waltz. The morphine on your breath could make a grown man dizzy. His hands on my shoulders, he lifts himself up ivy stand, maple ribbons of tube and power cord. We step, step, stop, step, step, steady our way to the toilet, rolling the stand after us. He can sit up on his own. I give him a moment, snap on surgical gloves, clean him gently, reverse our papa waltz, and lay him down to rest, trying to look busy, listening for his death.
Oh, my goodness. Well, Gary Glazner, I want to thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe, and I hope you come back again to Santa Fe.
I do, too, and when I used to have my show on KSFR, I always used to say it as KSFR.
Is that the Spanish or the pirate pronunciation?
Pirate Talk Radio.
It's just about time to go. The news will be with us in just a moment.